Good morning, Santa Fe, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are broadcasting from the studios of KSFR and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. And we're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'd like to welcome Linda Siegel. She is the KSFR legislative correspondent here to talk to us about the, well, now happening legislative session. The legislative session started yesterday. Welcome.
Well, good morning, Mary Charlotte. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you here. And we've been doing a legislative update with each other for several years now. But I wanted to do something which we've also done before, which is talk about the legislative session itself. This is a 30-day session, which happens every even year. What is a 30-day session as opposed to a 60-day session?
Well, a 30-day session is supposed to be about money. Of course, every year the New Mexico legislature has to pass a new budget. And our budget is over $6 billion now. So the 30-day session is dedicated to the passing of this budget. But since Governor Richardson has been in, he's had a very ambitious agenda that goes much beyond what the budgets are in the 30-day session. So there are going to be a number of bills on what's called his call, C-A-L-L. And he gets to decide what kinds of other issues are addressed in a 30-day session.
Now, in the system which we have, which has a separation of powers, legislative, executive, and judicial, what's the executive doing putting bills into the legislature?
Well, that's what the Constitution says he can do, so he does it. And, of course, our 60-day sessions are anything goes, the budget and all of this legislation. And when you condense a lot of substantive legislation, non-money legislation, into a 30-day session, it makes for a very exciting time.
That's right. Now, what are some of the agenda items above and beyond the budget? And we'll talk about the budget as well.
Well, we know one of the most interesting and controversial issues is going to be health care, health insurance reform. And the governor has a very extensive bill, which they've been working on for months and months. That's going to be on the call. There is another huge bill, which is the funding formula for education. This bill proposes to totally revamp how we fund public education in New Mexico. So right there are two hugely controversial bills. There will be some crime bills, some domestic violence crime bills. I've heard that the governor is going to put some kind of ethics reform. I think we just heard on KSFR a couple days ago that the Attorney General also has some crime bills he'd like to see on the governor's call. So there may be 30 or more substantive pieces of legislation.
Whereas in a 60-day session, there are
thousands.
Hundreds, if not thousands.
Yeah, definitely hundreds. In a typical 60-day session, there are 3,000 bills, memorials, and constitutional amendments typically introduced.
Now, let's talk about what some of these words mean. What is a bill as opposed to a memorial?
Well, a bill is a piece of legislation that you can use either to fund something, pass money. Usually money bills have to get rolled into the big budget bill, which we call House Bill 2, or into what we call House Bill 2 Junior, which is usually a bill started in the Senate, but we always call it the Junior Bill. But money bills and substantive pieces of legislation are what we call bills. And they have to pass both the House and the Senate and then be signed or vetoed by the governor. A memorial is a piece of legislation that normally people use to study issues. If you've got an important issue that maybe you're not ready to do a piece of substantive legislation, or things that lobbyists do strategy-wise, if it looks like you can't pass a substantive piece of legislation, then you do a memorial to study it for a year or two. And a memorial would request a department like the Health Policy Commission or the Children, Youth, and Families Department or even the Transportation Department to study this set of issues. A memorial can pass either the House or the Senate, or it can be a joint memorial and pass both of them. does not need to be signed by the governor. And those are notoriously unfunded mandates because we ask departments to use their resources and go and study whatever that issue is. And then the third piece of legislation, joint resolution, constitutional amendment, those are used to obviously amend the Constitution mostly. And those are passed by both the House and the Senate, and then they go on the ballot in the next general election. So I think we passed three or four constitutional amendments in the 2007 session, which will be on the ballot in November of 2008, and there'll probably be more this year.
So let's talk about some of these things, the formula for the funding of public education.
Yes. Well, there's been a task force that was funded by the legislature to the tune of $500,000 for the past 2 years. And that's involved legislators, superintendents of schools, school board members, members of the public, all kinds of people. They hired a consulting firm looking at, does our current school funding formula really work? And it's a very complicated formula. It's been very successful, but it has a lot of factors. And so there's a lot of calculation that goes into it. And, of course, people who run the public schools don't think that schools are adequately funded at this point. And this task force that created this new funding formula, they agreed. And they said that in order to sufficiently fund New Mexico public schools, that we need to inject another $340 million every year into those school coffers, and that we need to do it in a different way than we have in the past. So the formula changes to a very simple formula where a new number comes out that's a self-sufficiency number. Okay, if you've got a typical regular person in a school, then you're going to get X number of dollars. And then
a typical regular student that doesn't have special needs? Or
right, that's not poor, that doesn't have special needs. It's an average cost. So every student will get this average cost. And as I recall, it's around $5,000. Then on top of it, what they did was consolidated all these factors and decided to create the most important factors like poverty. So if you're a school that has a lot of kids who are very low income and poor, then you do need more money and more resources. So there's a factor for that. And there's a factor for special education and a factor for English speaking. Because if you, like many of our Santa Fe public schools, have quite a few kids who don't speak English yet. So that costs more money. So they created about four or five factors, and that's it, that really simplifies how a public school will be funded. And in the Santa Fe public schools, it will, if this were to pass, it would result in about a 14.5% increase in money to them, which, of course, they desperately need.
Now, I think probably any listener to this program would agree that the schools are horribly underfunded. It seems to me, however, that theoretically take into account that the cost of living is so much higher in Santa Fe, and therefore you need more money just for teachers' salaries so they can afford to live.
Well, that's a really good point, and it is something that the Funding Formula Task Force did not include. And that is a concern for those school districts that live in areas of high cost of living, which may only be ours, but that's an issue. And this formula is going to be very controversial. It's got some really good ideas, and I think the dialogue has excited people. One of the things that it does is it gives incredible autonomy to school boards and the superintendents to get their pot of money and spend it on whatever they want. And that's also caused some consternation.
That could be fabulous, or it could be catastrophic.
Absolutely. And that's why some legislators are like freaking out about, well, well, how are we going to make sure that there's enough nurses or there's enough bilingual teachers or enough...
Yeah, I mean, that the whole entire curriculum isn't just say no to drugs or something like that.
Right, right. It does, it gives the schools a pot of money and says, spend it how you think your community wants it spent and how you need it.
Very interesting.
And I know that the superintendent, public education secretary, Veronica Garcia, has expressed some of these concerns. So that's going to be a hot topic in the legislature.
And the
fact is, there is no money. We should talk about that too, how little money is available this year. And this, in order to implement this fully, they need $340 million. New dollars.
Well, didn't we have a budget surplus last year, the last couple of years?
Yes, we've had. It has been a great time at the legislature with lots of over $600 million of new recurring money in the last session and almost $900 million for capital outlay.
Which can lead to my favorite white meat, pork.
Yes, pork. There's been a lot of pork going along, but it goes for a lot of good projects. We don't build bridges to nowhere like they do in Alaska. But this year, the money is much tighter. We had the housing decline, and New Mexico did not totally escape that. Our gross receipts tax revenues are not as high as they have been. Gross receipts tax, I think, is good, but income taxes are down because the final year of the governor's income tax reduction cuts have gone into effect for this next fiscal year, and that's reduced state coffers by quite a bit. And even though oil and gas is still exorbitant, it can't make up the difference. So we're down.
Meaning the revenues, the tax revenues that come from oil and gas companies in New Mexico.
Right, yes. We've been riding high in large part to oil and gas revenues being so high because we used to base our state budget on oil being $25, $27 a barrel. Well, those days are gone forever. And now, as you know, we're around $100 a barrel. So the revenues are up in that area, but they're down in lots of other areas, and that's resulted in there being only $362 million new recurring dollars for the next fiscal year. And Medicaid alone needs over $100 million just to stay even. And education needs money. Even if you don't fund the funding formula, the new funding formula, education still needs $100+ million. Transportation, we've got all of our new transportation projects need money. So it's going to be a very tight budget year this
now,
time.
Now, we don't build bridges to nowhere, but we do build, isn't there a spaceport that spaceships to somewhere?
Yes, there is that spaceport out there near Las Cruces.
I'm not saying it isn't a worthy project.
Yeah. Well, and what's happening is those communities have been asked to pass gross receipts tax increases to continue to pay for the development of that. So Las Cruces already passed one, and a couple of the other communities, I think, have it on the agenda. So we're asking those local communities who will directly benefit from the economic development to pay for those, although there was a huge influx of state dollars initially. We do have the Rail Runner, and I personally think the Rail Runner is something we have desperately needed in this state for years. I'm sorry that it's come at a time when we now have lower revenues because we're going to have a hard time paying for it and also keeping our roads up. But it's all part of the package of economic development and having clean energy and trying to improve transportation in our state.
We're talking to legislative correspondent Linda Siegel. Let's go back to the education piece for just another moment. How do we know how things like bilingual education, physical education classes, art, music, and those kinds of things, which people talk about being important, would be affected one way or the other if this new funding formula were passed?
Well, what the people who worked on the formula said is that they incorporated all of those things into that very that average, that base rate. So they figured a nurse and a counselor in every school, physical education in the schools, music and art in the schools. They rolled that all into that base number. And then the add-ons are the poverty, the English only, and those things. Does that mean that a school district will then have a nurse in every school, have a music teacher and an art teacher? We don't know, because that's the part that some people are worried about. Well, we're giving too much authority to those schools, and they may not. Although there are certain requirements in PED, Public Education Department rules and laws about the number of teachers of a different kind that you have to have.
Let's talk about health insurance and health care. That's another big item that you mentioned earlier.
Yes, that's a huge item. And, of course, Governor Richardson has been running on a platform of health insurance reform and in his bid for presidency. And he also has a very big package of health reform for New Mexicans that they have, the department and the HSD have been working on for some time now. His bill essentially would create an authority. And this authority would be made up of, I can't remember the exact number of people, maybe 11 people that would be appointed, some by the governor, some by the legislature. And they would be given the task of working on a lot of these long-term health issues. On into the bill are discussions of perhaps combining certain current government entities like the retiree health care, the different programs that are now administered through the Human Services Department for low and working people who can't afford insurance, the state coverage initiative and the insurance pool, which covers people who have health problems and can't get insurance anywhere else, so they get to be in this pool. So part of what he envisions is incorporating all of these into under one entity, this authority. Then there are things like future mandates that everybody in New Mexico would have to have insurance or be able to prove that they can pay for health care if they're a multimillionaire and they don't want insurance, that they can pay for it themselves, that employers have to pay for their employees, or if they don't, they have to pay into a state fund. Lots of things like that. Having providers do electronic billing to all the multiple insurance companies, having providers have electronic patient files. These are all part of that bill with different time frames for phasing in and discussing, but it gives a tremendous amount of power to this authority to come up with the mechanisms that will result in this happening over a period of time. And it's very controversial. A lot of legislators think it's too much, we don't have any money now, and they may not want to do it.
It's a little hard to understand. Would it, the things that you were talking about, the electronic billing, the patient file, the various things, they would be mandated or they would be studied?
Well, they would be mandated by a certain period of time.
Which, as yet, not determined.
Well, there are some dates in it, but, you know, when a bill like this gets introduced, it has lots of opportunities for amendments, but that it's envisioned that these things would happen on a time frame.
Now, how does the health insurance industry feel about this bill?
Well, I can't speak for them, but one of the things that will be a counter to this bill is the single-payer bill. And, of course, the health insurance industry opposes a single-payer bill because essentially it puts them out of business. And a single-payer bill says that some one entity, not necessarily government, but an entity becomes the person or the entity that holds all the insurance money in the state and pays out all the providers and hospitals and those kinds of people.
And the economies, of course, that come along with that are mammoth.
Yes, there was a study that the state paid for by Mathematica, which showed that there were cost savings by going to a single payer. So the health insurance industry certainly appreciates the governor's approach in that nobody's out of business. We still have multiple health insurance companies, and they're still doing their thing, but there are more controls set on them. I know in one version of the bill, I can't remember if it's in the last version, that 85% of the income that health insurance companies take in has to be paid out in services, and that's certainly a requirement that no one has now. And I believe that's in this latest version. So it's a mixed bag for the health insurance companies, but they do stay in business.
Now, is a single payer system bill going to be introduced?
Yes. In fact, it already has. The legislature
last year and the year before, as I recall.
Yeah, but it's already been introduced in this session because they did a little thing that they've been able to do but haven't done before called pre-filing.
Mm.
So there are some bills that are already listed in the locator. Anyone who wants to go on the New Mexico legislative website can go in there and pull up the single-payer bill, which has already been introduced by Senator Carlos Cisneros from Taos.
So we've talked about three things now, the education funding formula, the health insurance bill, and the single-payer bill. Who writes these bills?
The official writers of the bill are a group of staff people that work on the fourth floor of the Capitol called Legislative Council Service. They're the final drafters of any bill. But a lot of the bills are written by the people who are pushing them. And then once you've got a draft of that bill, you take it to the Legislative Council Service and they put it into New Mexico legislative language. The bill that the governor has had multiple authors and people having input and ideas into it, but it's been written and drafted by the Legislative Council Service.
Are there any safeguards to prevent, for example, the utilities or oil and gas companies or whatever to write the energy bills or to prevent conflicts of interest?
Not really. I mean, lobbyists write bills. That's kind of what...
You're a lobbyist.
Yes.
Do you write bills?
Yes, I do. And I write them and I take them to the sponsors and they say, oh, I like this, I don't like that, take this out. And then it goes up to the legislative drafting and gets written. So,
but it's tricky business because chances are that the writers of the bill who are immersed, if they're lobbyists, let's say, who are completely immersed in whatever industry or interest group they are pushing for know more about it than the sponsor
absolutely
does
usually,
and therefore how do you prevent them just giving themselves a free ride?
Well, the way hopefully in this process that is prevented is once the bill is introduced and then you start the hearing process, then you have the opportunity for all the different sides to come in and testify and to come in and talk to the individual legislators and say, this is a really bad bill and you shouldn't pass it, or this is a really good bill and maybe you need to tweak this language. So that hopefully gets corrected in the actual legislative process.
But it's really incumbent on citizens and citizens groups to read the fine print.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because in New Mexico, as in probably everywhere, lobbyists write a lot of the bills because we do know the topics, we do know the issues, and we do have what our clients want. Our agendas, and that's what we're supposed to put out there. But that just because you write a bill one way doesn't mean that's the way that bill is going to pass, for better or worse.
How much does your average bill get changed, tweaked, and amended? Bills that pass.
Yes, it really depends on the issue. Like I represent the nurses, and every few years we make amendments to the Nursing Practice Act, and most people don't really care about that, and so except the nurses and other healthcare providers maybe and some consumer groups. So that kind of bill probably isn't going to get amended very much. A controversial bill about energy, a controversial bill about health care. Those bills are going to have a lot of amendments and changes. And sometimes bills are totally rewritten and a substitute bill is dropped into that original bill and the old language is totally gone.
So the number of the bill remains the same, but
yes,
the content is different.
Could be different, yes.
We're talking to legislative correspondent Linda Siegel. Let's talk about the crime bill.
Well, I'm not sure what all the crime bills are going to be. I know that one of them that Mayor Martin Chavez would like is, and I think the DA in Albuquerque wanted this bill to make car theft a higher degree felony, because evidently we've been experiencing a high amount of car thefts in New Mexico, and it's not a high enough, it's not a crime that's punished at a high enough level, people are thinking, because everybody's stealing cars or something.
Those things always make me wonder if a car thief is going to say, oh, they've upped the level of felony to
right.
this bill, therefore I think I won't steal this car.
Right, like they even know what the felony levels are. There's going to be some tweaking of domestic violence legislation. I'm not totally sure on exactly what those are, but there are things like different penalties for offenders and creation of different kinds of programs for offenders. And I don't know all the governor's crime package, because right now it hasn't been released. They haven't said all the bills that are going to be on the call. So we only know the general topic. And as we know that yesterday, we'll know that, and then we'll be able to analyze them all. So I can't tell you exactly. The ethics bill, last legislative session, there were a number of ethics and campaign reform bills, and there were a couple that were left out. I think some about public financing and an ethics committee. So that is probably in that batch of bills that we haven't had a chance to look at yet.
What are the areas in which there is the most need for ethics reform, do you think?
Well, there's a public concern that things go on at the legislature in secret and that it's not as transparent as people would like it to be. That's that whole conference committee issue that I think we've talked about before and has certainly been discussed for a number of years, where the conference committees, which are the committees that meet when a bill has passed the House and the Senate and there's been some language change and they can't agree. And so three people from the House, three people from the Senate meet, not in public, and come up with some kind of compromise. The other ethics area is creating this ethics review committee. A lot of legislatures and even Congress have ethics committees that are, if somebody does something, a legislator does something that is questionable, then it goes to this committee to review that behavior. And that's...
Well, how do they get found out and who calls them on it?
Well, usually it's the media who finds out, or...
That would be we.
Yes, yes. Or maybe another legislator thinks, you know, that wasn't quite right. I might make an ethics complaint against this person.
But I would think within the culture of collegiality...
It's hard.
You wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, it's hard to have it happen. And there's been some resistance from the legislature to these kinds of reforms. It was a battle years ago just to get finance reports of legislators and statewide office holders on the Secretary of State's website so that public people could go into the website and look up and see how much money so-and-so got from the tobacco industry or the
yeah.
liquor industry or the Nurses Association or whatever. And finally, after like 10 years, that is generally possible, that you can go on to the Secretary of State's website and look up those kinds of things. But that it's not easy. And part of the feeling, I think, is that most legislators are doing right, and they don't feel like they should have to do some
be
of these
scrutinized,
things.
Scrutinized, yeah.
Or just have to go to a lot of trouble to do that, because a lot of our legislators are not techno savvy and don't necessarily know how to do all those filings electronically. I mean, that was a complaint originally, a big reason for not doing it.
So somebody might come from a part of the state which is not as technologically...
Or an older legislator,
right,
who computers just aren't in their realm.
Well, who are the legislators? I mean, who runs for the House and Senate of New Mexico?
Well, that's a really good question, because here we have a legislature that we so value, we don't pay them one dime to be legislators.
They're all volunteers.
They're all volunteers. They get a per diem when they come to Santa Fe and stay for 30 days or 60 days. They get about $150 a day to pay for their hotel or their condo or whatever and buy food. So they're not making any money on this process, and they get money, the same kind of per diem or a little less, when they're doing interim committees throughout the summer and the fall. So who can run as a legislature? Someone who's retired and already has an income, someone who has a spouse or partner who has a good income and can help support them. We do have teachers who take leaves of absence and come to the legislature. We have.
I hope they bring their students. That would be a great education.
Well, we do have a lot of students coming up there all the time. There's lawyers, there's accountants, there's insurance people, but they have to be people who have the kinds of jobs that person as an employee can say, okay, I'm going to be gone for 30 days in January and 60 days the next year. And because we don't pay them anything, that does limit who is able to run. And you have to raise campaign dollars.
Now, what are the rules about, okay, so they're not paid, they come to Santa Fe, they get a per diem. What are the rules about their being allowed to be wined and dined by lobbyists such as Linda Siegel?
Well, I'm not one of the big winers or diners, but because most of my clients are nonprofits. But last week, for instance, one of my clients bought lunch for all the House Appropriation and Senate Finance people. And the new rules that were just passed in the last session say that lobbyists cannot spend more than $250 per legislature on gifts. So a meal is considered a gift. So now all the lobbyists, if, like, we buy a lunch for somebody, we have to keep track of that, and they're supposed to keep track of that. So there have been, you remember, there used to be golf trips and skiing trips and all kinds of things that now, unless they're under $250, are not going to be happening. So that's probably a good thing, and it would be even a better thing if we would break down and pay our legislators something, value their time, because these people spend hours when they're not in the legislature taking constituent calls, meeting with constituents, talking about issues, and they don't get a dime for that.
And they're legislators all year round, even
yes.
though the session is only 1 month or 2 months.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
We're talking to legislative correspondent Linda Siegel. Now, there are two other issues that we haven't talked about, and I don't know to what extent they're going to appear this session, but one is water and one is energy in our globally warmed world.
Yeah, I think that water and energy are pretty much done, that we're not going to do too much on them in the 08 session. There are some water bills looking at, like, the Gila River, I think. You know, the Gila River is the only free-flowing river left in New Mexico, and a lot of people want to keep it that way, and
yeah.
some people would like to not keep it that way, you know, use it for energy. So there's always some bills that get introduced later on that might address that. Of course, you can introduce bills up until the 15th day of a 30-day session, so we don't really know everything that's going to come in. I think a lot of the energy bills passed or did what they're going to do in the last session. We had some very positive things that occurred, and I don't see any of those coming up, but you never know. Now, one bill that is on the governor's call is the domestic partner bill. And that's a bill that almost passed in the last legislative session. That's one that would create a system, not marriage, but provide many of the same benefits and responsibilities of marriage to people either of same sex or opposite sex couples who want to go to the county clerk and get a domestic partnership. And you go and fill out an application just like you do for a marriage license and become domestic partnered. And then there are health care protections,
if you're a New Mexico domestic partner and you're insured by Blue Cross, does that mean your spouse has to get benefits as if they were a...
It would if this bill...
If this bill passes.
Yes, yes, it would. So that, and an employer who gives insurance benefits to a person's spouse, an employee's spouse, would then be required to do it to a domestic partner. But in that, it's not going to cost the employer anymore because usually the employee pays for that spouse or that domestic partner's insurance anyway.
So there would also be rights, for example, if your partner were in the hospital.
Absolutely.
And or if your partner dies, you have inheritance and so on.
Yes, the inheritance would pass just as if the person were a spouse. Also for adoption of children and protection for families. One group that utilizes domestic partners in other states that aren't same-sex couples are like people with disabilities who are on Social Security or SSI, older people who maybe have a pension from a prior spouse and they want some of the legal protections of marriage, but they can't get married or they would lose their benefits. They might want to do a domestic partnership.
Oh, you can have it both ways.
Yeah, there you go. But we wouldn't want that, would we?
No. We're talking to Linda Siegel. So the last thing, we've got about 10 minutes left, is the big giant rhinoceros on the coffee table, namely the budget.
Right. That's going to be such a controversial issue this session because all the legislators in the meetings before the session has even started have been saying, you know, there's just no money. Whereas, as I said earlier, there was $600 million of recurring money in the last session. There's less than $400 million this year. Medicaid's going to take at least $1 million of that. At least $100 million of that. Education over $100 million. So there's no room for expansion in areas where we really need. Domestic violence shelters need more money. Child care providers need more money. The transportation department needs more money. The health department for various things needs more money. We need more money for school health clinics. Corrections.
Struggling for a small – everybody's struggling for a smaller piece of the pie.
For the same pot of money when most of that money is going to go just to keep things at the current level because of inflation, especially in health care. I mean, why would we need another $100 million in Medicaid just to stay at the current level? Well, a lot of it is – increased enrollment because it's an entitlement program, but it may also be because of the high inflation rate in medical services. So it's not the best of years, and people are really nervous about the economy. We've sort of avoided it in New Mexico, but other parts of the country are really having problems. And looking at and we've had layoffs at the labs, and every time there's 500 people laid off, 1,000 people laid off at Intel, there's their income tax we're not getting, there's the gross receipts tax we're not getting from them buying things, and it has a ripple effect. So we're looking at leaner times in our budget, and that whole capital outlay, that pork you were talking about, $900 million of pork in the last session and maybe $250 million this time. And some of that money, the Legislative Finance Committee already said they think that $50 million of that should go right into the Transportation Department to just keep them going.
Well, probably everybody has their own personal experience of having witnessed government waste in one way or another. How do you, when you have both shortage and waste at the same time, how do you solve those problems? I mean, in other words, how does a government self-correct in places where they're just spending needlessly and put it toward programs that really need it?
Well, it's hard to know. It's hard to say. One of the things that quite a few years ago the Legislative Finance Committee implemented were performance standards. So every single department in government has these performance standards for every little program that they have within their department. And so they're supposed to meet these standards or bad things are going to happen to them, that their money will be cut or the program will be reassessed. And so that does go on. In my experience, I haven't seen a lot of programs go away, though occasionally they do. Most of the time, we're growing the programs. I mean, there were times in the 90s when there were lean budget times like these, and programs just sort of stayed static, and sometimes a few programs would go away. But I don't think government is really that great at figuring out what's working necessarily well and not well, because it is a cumbersome process.
And the path of least resistance is keep it the way it was before.
Right. Yep.
So what is the role of the governor of New Mexico and the governor's office throughout the 30-day legislative process?
Well, that really depends a lot on the governor. When Governor Gary Johnson was in, he's a Republican, and of course the legislature is Democrat, he was a real hands-off governor. He never came down to the floor. He sent his people down a little bit, but his power was that when bills came up there, he vetoed them, and he vetoed about three-quarters of the bills that passed every year.
Really?
Now, Governor Richardson has been much more of a hands-on, get involved, try to move the legislature kind of guy. And he's got a team of lobbyists and people that work on his staff that are really engaged and constantly talking with legislators. And he brings people up to let the governor will bring people, legislators up to his office and say, I want this bill to pass. And he has... He leans on legislators and really tries to make things happen. And many of his agenda items have passed because of that. The first few years of the legislative session when Governor Richardson came in, he really did intimidate a lot of legislators and consequently got a lot of things passed. I think that this year, since he's been engaged in running for president, that the legislature isn't quite as responsive to everything he wants. But he has been a very successful governor in getting the legislature to pass his kinds of initiatives. And many of them have been very good. And some of them the legislators are unhappy about. The income tax cut is one, which is one of the reasons why the state now has much less revenue to run on. And some people say, well, that's a really great thing because we don't need to grow government. And some people say, well, we have all these needs and we're not meeting them now because we don't have the same level of revenue. But this is a governor who has been extremely engaged and will be again, I imagine.
Well, these are questions when people say we want small government or no government. That's, as a general thing, it sounds great. When you come to specifics, you want to ask whether you want lines painted in the roads and traffic lights and police and fire and
right.
education and parks and all and these things that you can see. And there's many, many more things that you can't see that are just as important.
Right. And helping people in poverty and helping people with health insurance, those are all important issues that if we don't do that as a society, the ramifications on all of us are huge, and our state and our country won't be as great a place to live.
So you, besides being the KSFR legislative correspondent, our lobbyist, who are you representing?
Well, I represent a lot of different groups, all the different nurses associations, advanced practice nurses and the school nurses. I represent Planned Parenthood. I represent the American Cancer Society and the Heart Association, the domestic violence shelters. That's a new client I have. I represent the Santa Fe Public Schools. So I have a good variety of clients that I really like their issues. It's been such a pleasure representing the schools in the last year.
Health and education.
Yes, mostly. All. Yes, health and education.
Well, Linda Siegel, it's wonderful to have you on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and we look forward to your legislative updates.
Yes, I guess I'll be giving those on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Yes. Not sure about next week, but definitely the week after that.
Great. Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.